Chapter 5. Choosing Specific Employment Opportunities. At this point, you have prepared all of your materials, or gotten impatient enough with preparing materials that you want to do some actual job hunting while you continue to work on your materials. You've also considered the big picture issues outlined in Chapter 1. You're now ready to start making your career roadmap a reality. Let's start with some good news. In general, professionals in the patent law field are very much in demand. Patent law is a pretty exclusive field. If you have passed the patent bar, you are already in a select and coveted group. From the perspective of a job hunter, it may be the best legal field to be in. Many patent agents and attorneys find jobs with relative ease. It's just a matter of digging in and pursuing them. Although, the tendency is to think that it's harder to find entry-level jobs. For example, legal recruiters generally won't be interested in you. There's a lot that employers like about entry-level professionals. Although entry-level employees generally require training, employers often prefer training a new employee from the ground up over retraining someone who has learned a different way of doing things. Basically, you're a blank slate for your employer to shape as they see fit. Frankly, it's cheaper for firms to hire agents and attorneys without experience. At the same time, though, you will be able to reap the benefits of overall salary increases in the legal field at the time of hire. So, even though it's cheaper for your future employer, you'll typically still be making excellent money. Because of differences in background, geographical considerations, specialization fields, and other issues, specifics of the job search process vary widely. If you got a PhD, wrote patent applications for a few years, then got your JD from a top 5 law school, and have no geographical constraints, you're in a very different situation than a patent agent with a bachelor's degree whose family obligations require them to remain in a mid-sized city. Of course, your approach will vary accordingly. Basically, however, there are 4 ways to land yourself any job that you'll want to keep for a while. Number 1. Find and answer job ads. Number 2. Research and contact potential employers. Number 3. Work your way toward the job you want. And number 4. Network. This chapter walks you through the first 3 of these approaches. Networking is covered more thoroughly in its own chapter. Because it's so integrated with career development, it crops up in this chapter as well. Keep 2 things in mind as you read the different approaches. First, you can always adopt more than one approach. In fact, many job search specialists recommend using as many different strategies as you can. Second, the approaches aren't discrete. For example, option number 1 overlaps with option number 2 if you go to potential employers' websites to look for job ads, and option number 2 overlaps with option number 4 in the sense that making contact is always a form of networking. Also, there is a continuum, not a clear line, between directly asking for a job and meeting with someone to chat about the field in general. A piece of advice before beginning any of these approaches. Make sure you keep records of everything you do. That includes contacts of any kind, phone calls, letters of inquiry, any networking you do, and, of course, job applications. It is extremely embarrassing to forget that you have already communicated with someone, what exactly you included in a job application, what you said in a phone conversation, or any number of other things that you can do during this process. Although you may think that there's no way you'll forget certain contacts or other information, you probably will hit a point in your search where there's too much information to keep in your head or scrawled on post-it notes on your desk. Unfortunately, you won't know you have hit that point until it's too late. For that reason, it's helpful to decide in advance exactly how you are going to organize your information. Files by employer? Files by approach or date? Consider whether you expect your search to be broad, many different contacts, or deep, for example, fewer, more intense networking meetings. It's useful to have records in hard copy, as well as on your computer. The hard copy is close at hand, while computer logs are searchable. Organize your information as you go, whether it's notes on a phone conversation or your list of favorite patent law firms. Again, by the time you realize you won't remember everything, it will be too late to reconstruct it. Number 1. Find and answer job ads. For starters, there is nothing wrong with the good old-fashioned approach of looking in your local newspaper for job ads. Many career counselors and career guidebooks will tell you that the classifieds are not a good way to go. They often cite a low success rate as one reason not to depend on the classifieds. However, patent law is a specialized enough field that if you find an ad that fits your needs, you should definitely apply for the job. It's not something like graphic design where you might be competing against 100 other candidates. On the other hand, it's not enough to rely on your local newspaper. Many employers don't advertise available positions through the newspaper, choosing instead more specialized listings, for example, the local legal newspaper or a legal field-specific website, or more general listings, for example, a general interest job search site like Monster.com or CareerBuilder.com. Depending upon the scope of your search, and especially on your geographical restrictions, you should combine the newspaper with a more targeted approach, like going to local law firms' websites, or a broader approach, like going to legal or general job sites, or both. As the above example suggests, one of the many, many effects of the Internet is the multiplication of job search sites. Your ability to search for jobs online is limited primarily by how much time you have, because you're unlikely to exhaust the possible sites where you could find job ads, though you may get to the point where you are seeing the same ads over again. General job seeker sites carry patent law job ads, and some, including CareerBuilder.com, have subsites devoted especially to the legal field. Moreover, some local newspaper job classifieds have entered into relationships with some of these huge sites. When you go to the job ad section of your newspaper's website, it might bounce you to a site like Yahoo Hot Jobs. There are also many, many job search sites targeted specifically to legal professionals. An internet search for terms relevant to your job search will reveal many others. These sites often also have sections with advice for job seekers and other potentially useful resources. Unless you think you're a good candidate for legal recruitment, and most entry-level professionals are not, watch out for legal recruiter sites that look like general job search sites. A terrific way to find job ads to answer is to generate a list of all the potential employers in your area and look for their websites. Most law firms and other organizations, if you're not interested in law firms, list job openings on their sites. It's flattering to let potential employers know that you saw the job ad on their site. It sends the message that you're interested enough in that particular employer to be searching their site instead of just trolling the web for ads. In fact, even if you see an ad first while trolling for ads, consider checking the firm's website and responding to the ads as written there. In addition to the flattery factor, sometimes there is more detail in those ads. Of course, if a particular firm is huge and prestigious, or if it's really the only game in town, flattering them this way will not earn you as many brownie points as it will if it's a smaller, less well-known firm. Responding to job ads tends to be a relatively straightforward process, if the job is a good match for your skill set. But what should you do if it's not quite the right fit? Or if it's a bit of a reach. You may be tempted to submit your application in hopes that the employer will notice you and realize that they actually do need someone like you instead of, or in addition to, the position they advertised. In general, though, that's not a good idea. The people responsible for screening resumes for your position will likely have a very narrow focus. What's probably going through their minds is something like, does this applicant fill position X? No, no, yes, no, yes. As they go, they put applications into two piles, rejecting the no's and sending the yeses along to the next step. In some cases, and depending mostly on the size of the firm and the organizational structure of their HR record keeping, they may consider you a rejected candidate for some period thereafter, regardless if you're eminently qualified for another position in the firm. Number two. Research and contact potential employers. If you are in a position to get into patent law, you're probably a terrific researcher, and this approach may be best suited to you, even as a stepping stone to other approaches. There are two steps to this process. Figure out what's out there for you and contact those targeted employers. Both of these steps involve some strategizing about how best to proceed. Locating potential employers depends first upon defining the scope of your search. If you're searching locally, the pool is narrowed considerably, unless you're in Washington, D.C. or another large market. If you're in a small market and you want to and can be comprehensive about your search, you can go the old-fashioned Yellow Pages route. Make a list of the firms, and then if you want to narrow the pool, look them up online, finding out about them and the opportunities they offer. If you're in a large market, the research might be more complicated. Sometimes larger markets have local professional networks that have websites and listings. You can use a search engine to look for patent law firms. If you want to work somewhere that only does patent law, patent attorneys in your state, city, or geographical area of your choosing, and you can move from locating individuals to identifying what firms they work for. What should you do once you've created a targeted list? Obviously, if you go to their websites and they have job openings that fit your qualifications, you should apply for them. Beyond that, your range of options is quite wide. You have both broad and deep options in terms of making contacts with potential employers. At the broader end, you're aiming for coverage, making yourself visible to as many people as possible. Sending your resume and cover letter all over the place is a classic example of this approach. Depending upon the market you're in and your position relative to that market, you may be able to land a job that way. The resume and cover letter approach is both classic and boring. On one hand, it has become an institution because it works, and for that reason alone, it should get some respect. People do, indeed, get jobs by sending out resumes and cover letters. On the other, it has gotten tired and cliched to the point that it can be the best way to guarantee that you don't make a blip on someone's radar. If you are interested in doing something slightly different, a similarly broad approach that has worked for some professionals is to send out a short form letter to each company they want to work for, stating a little about themselves and offering to send more information, for example, resume and cover letter, if the company is hiring or interested in talking further about possibilities. This works best if you're willing to send out a lot of short form letters, for example, to all the firms in a particular city. While you might think that this approach would not work at the most prestigious firms, it actually can, as can the resume and cover letter. A middle-of-the-road approach that combines elements of broad and deep approaches is to create a smaller, more targeted list and to write carefully tailored cover letters. While this approach works for some people, it can also be the worst of both worlds. If you're going to write letters, send them to as many places as you can. If you're going to take a targeted approach, it's useful to have the feedback loop or give and take that a conversation provides. In general, though, the logic of the approach is that readers of such letters may recognize that you spent some time doing your research and attempting to appeal to their particular situation. If you invest a lot of energy in individualized letters, make sure that they are truly individualized and not simply stating the obvious. Some people spend 2 or 3 hours researching a firm, decide it is an excellent fit, then end up commenting in their letters on things like the firm's size being exactly what they're looking for, something virtually everyone who wants a job there will say, even if it's not true. You want the recipient of the letter to appreciate your investment. Also, make sure you send the letter to the right person, or all of your work will simply disappear. Taking a deeper approach means targeting fewer people and spending more time with them. This is really networking, or the informational interview approach to networking, so it is discussed more in the next chapter. But here's a brief introduction to how it works. You identify particular individuals at the firms you're most interested in and offer to take them out to lunch to learn more about what they do and their firm. If you choose this approach, focus on the fact that it's an informational interview. It's usually best not to raise the subject of employment at all. Focus instead on taking them out to lunch and learning about them, their work, and their firm. If they raise the issue of employment, you can follow their lead. Just make sure you don't switch into hardcore job hunting mode at this meeting. You can also use this approach at firms where you're not particularly interested in working. Those conversations might be more useful because you truly are networking and not feeling like you're at a pseudo-interview. In either case, try to stay in the frame of mind where your primary goal is to make a good contact. Research on the law firms in your area can also generate other useful information, like the local professional organizations employees belong to, the types of pro bono work firm members do, and more. This can prove useful for your networking, so it's worth investigating. Number 3. Work your way toward the job you want. Unless you are in a position to be offered your dream job right now, you're already working your way toward the job you want. Everyone is. The difference is that some people's routes are more circuitous than others. Even what constitutes entry level is different depending on things like your previous experience, how prestigious your educational credentials are, and how in demand your field of specialization is. The least circuitous route is to get an entry-level job that clearly feeds you towards your dream job. Certainly, for some people, this is a possibility. However, the reality is that most people, during the course of their career, will make some lateral moves or backward moves rather than forward moves. Whether you're an agent or an attorney, if what you want to do is write patent applications, but you don't have any experience doing so, you may need to start doing something else and work your way into patent writing. You might, for example, start out as a patent searcher at a law firm, or an in-house or tech transfer position, and then move into patent application writing later. Look into internships or clerkships. The more prestigious, the better. Large law firms often have more well-established internship programs, although you can also get lucky with small firms. Both can provide valuable experience to add to your resume, and both can get your foot in the door in terms of establishing a network. Federal clerkships are generally more prestigious and will increase your job prospects across the board, while state clerkships are excellent networking opportunities, though limited to the particular state or locality. Thus, if you aren't operating with geographical constraints, you're typically better off in a federal clerkship or a large firm internship, or at a small firm with a big reputation. If you know where you're going to be working for the long term, you'll develop better local contacts by interning at a large or small local firm or taking a state clerkship. If you have long-term geographical constraints but are able to leave the area temporarily, you'll maximize the prestige factor of your time away by doing a federal clerkship or an internship at a very well-known firm. You can also get some terrific experience under your belt at other places. Future employers may not have heard of your internship employer, but it does give you more direct experience for your resume. Obviously, the more direct, the better. Start out in a geographical area other than your first choice. Assess the legal market where you'd like to be. Is it hard to break into or saturated with people with your specialty? Or, alternatively, is it so small that you don't know how they'd squeeze you in? Both of those are good reasons to consider beginning your career elsewhere, making a name for yourself, and trying later. Another related issue is that it's generally easier to pursue a job search locally than long distance. If you are currently somewhere where the market for jobs is pretty good, but you'd prefer to be somewhere else where the market is not as good, it might benefit you to get some good experience under your belt and try for your top choice later. Even if you have your heart set on working at a big, prestigious firm, consider spending some time at a smaller firm and moving to a larger firm once you have more experience. Even if you want to work at a law firm, consider starting out at a company that has in-house patent attorneys, agents, or liaisons. If you choose this route, be aware that in some cases it is difficult to get hired at a prestigious law firm later. If you have an eventual goal other than working in a company's patent office, it's a good idea to find out where people who have previously held similar positions have gone for their next jobs. Depending upon what's available in your area, it might be worth pursuing temporary or part-time employment, if it lines up with your career goals in other ways. It's possible to get jobs through temp agencies, although, one, it's lower status, both in terms of the kind of work you do and how it's perceived, than a direct hire temporary position. Two, many firms will advertise temporary jobs on their own rather than go through an agency. And three, the agency will take a cut of your pay. The opposite is true when you find temporary employment on your own. Sometimes you can get your foot in the door at a higher level than you might with a permanent or full-time position. This is partly because it's sometimes harder to fill such positions with qualified people, and partly because employers are not making as big a commitment with such positions. They may be less conservative about taking risks on a newbie. A general guideline. Make sure anything that is working your way toward the job you want, instead of getting the job you want, is clearly heading you in the right direction. The best predictor of whether it is doing so is to find out what people who previously occupied that position went on to do. Any job or other experience you take on will put you on a track, or sometimes more than one possible track, and you need to make sure that whatever you plan to do moves you towards your long-term vision. For example, If you are looking into working for a company, you may find that virtually everyone who has worked for that company in the past has stayed there until they retired, or has started their own patent prosecution practice, or has moved on to a particular law firm. Obviously, if a significant number of your predecessors have gone on to positions that you'd love to have, it's a potentially good career move to do what they did. This should go without saying, but it's worth reinforcing. If no one has gone on to do what you want to do, you should take that very seriously. Perhaps there's a clear explanation that doesn't apply to you. In that case, you don't have to avoid going that route. However, in many cases, and especially if you're looking at a large pool of predecessors, you have good reason to be skeptical. Although networking is discussed in more detail in the next chapter, it's worth mentioning here that you might have, or develop during the networking process, contacts who can't help you to get the job you're working toward, but can help you to secure a really great stepping stone to that job. Don't forget about that possibility. Final advice. During this process, don't forget to take good care of yourself. While job hunting, it's easy for your usual schedules and routines to fall by the wayside. You might have a meeting here and a meeting there, suddenly discover a website with 45 ads that seem appropriate, or you're stuck playing the waiting game. You can fall into a purgatory of unemployment, where you not only have stopped exercising, but forget to shower, or you think you'll wait to shower until you exercise, but you never exercise. Because job hunting is not only a potentially full-time job, but a potentially limitless process, you always feel like you should be doing something. You also feel like you're really busy, but also like you're not doing anything at all. The sense that you're not doing anything can make you feel stressed. For the vast majority of people, job hunting is very stressful. Make a commitment to take care of yourself. Schedule time for the gym, massages, long baths, or whatever works for you. Or promise yourself that every day you will do one thing, or take 1 hour or whatever for yourself. A useful way of strategizing about stress relief is to make sure that you do some things that activate you, like working out or doing something else that's stimulating for your body or your mind, and things that decompress you, that are just relaxing. Committing to self-care is important for your well-being, but it's also central to your job search. Even if one or more of the three approaches described in this chapter is the focus of your job hunt, you should still be doing some networking. In fact, in some respects, networking is inevitable when you're on the job market. One of the side benefits of networking is that it involves getting out and interacting with people. It keeps you in the profession of your choice, even if you don't yet have employment there. It also keeps your social skills alive and reminds you that it does matter that you are an energetic, enthusiastic person with a multitude of talents and skills.